All right, welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols, joined by number one pick in the WNBA draft, out of Stanford, of course, Chinay Ogumike, and our Hall of Famer, senior writer, Jackie McMullen. Coming up, guys, we're going to be discussing the rough weekend for the Warriors. Losses in seven of their last eight games. Where does the franchise go from here? How can they right the ship? Mark Spears is going to join us for that discussion. First, though, let's get to one of the Jump's OG games, something, nothing, or everything. Starting with Jrue Holiday, who just agreed to a four-year, $135 million extension that Holiday's agent told Woj includes bonuses that could take the deal to $160 million. The deal also includes a player option for the fourth year, that's 2024-2025. Today, the Bucks also have Giannis signed through 2026, Middleton through 2024. So is this Holiday extension something, nothing, or everything?
It's everything. And for the reason you mentioned, Rach, but first and foremost, when it comes to Jrue Holiday, he is someone that everyone in the league is absolutely rooting for. His beautiful family, we've known the journey that they've been through, who, by the way, his family has given so much to their communities. Mm-hmm. Now, as it pertains to basketball, most people will think, why do you think, you know, this is, why would you make this payment now? Don't you want to see him prove himself in the playoffs? But, you know, I started thinking of the second layer. As a player, I know that maybe the Bucks, they're doing this just so that he can feel officially a part of their core. As you mentioned, Rach, with Giannis, with Chris Middleton, and now Jrue locked down. So now they are free to perform in the playoffs with reckless abandon together as a team. With this talent all locked down contractually, the Milwaukee run truly starts now, in my opinion. They're only one game back of Philly and Brooklyn for first. I see this contract signing as crucial in solidifying this team, not just, you know, from the physical aspect of who's out there, but mentally they know that this team will have to grind it out come playoff time.
Yeah, there's no question. This is everything, Rachel. And the main reason is because when they acquired Jrue Holiday, the idea was that he was going to be here for the long term. That was part of the comfort level for you to say, here's what we're going to build around. Here's another piece, a foundational piece that, by the way, is a two-way player that can help us on both ends. And all you have to do is look at the short sample size this year when Holiday was out for COVID protocols. The team was a 500 team without him. They were 5-5. When he came back, that coincided with the run that we're watching now that's gotten them near the top of the standings that Shanae just alluded to. So this is everything. You had to get this guy locked up. Or I mean, it would have been a disaster, honestly.
I mean, look, they kind of made this decision when they traded for him, right? I mean, to your point about how much they gave up for him, 100%. Also, that was part of the decision-making back then. So whether you get this deal done now, whether you get it done at the end of the season, that call had already been made. The question, though, I think is just, hey, this is the core now, right? I mentioned Giannis, Middleton, Jrue Holiday, who, as you point out, Chinay, not only deserves it for his on the court, but what he brings to the communities that he plays in. This is it, though. Do you think that this is a championship core that if you then continue to build things around them? That's going to be one of the questions, especially when you're in a conference with a team like Philly that is making moves, with a team like the Nets who, let's talk about Brooklyn. Steve Nash said there is a, quote, high probability that Kevin Durant returns to the Nets lineup this week. It won't be tonight, though. KD officially listed as out tonight against the Knicks. Still, Durant, who has, of course, been out since February with that hamstring strain, the news that he's coming back at all, do you think it is something, nothing, or everything, Jackie?
Oh, it's everything, because they need to find out. Not that we don't think these three guys are all great. We know that. They've only played seven games together, Rachel. They've got to figure out, how are we going to distribute the ball? I looked it up before I came on the show. Durant's usage percentage was at 30.1%. Kyrie's at around 29.8%. Harden, very low for him, around the 27% range. Very different from 2 years ago in Houston, where he was at 40%. But add up all those guys, Rachel. That's 88.7% usage percentage. That doesn't leave a lot for other guys. And you've also got to split it up among the three of them. So you've got to figure out how you're going to settle in with these three incredibly talented players and who's going to have the ball in his hand the most.
Yeah, it is totally everything. You know, after the arms race that came and went at the NBA trade deadline and throughout the, you know, the buyout market, now the field is officially set. And what I love about this is that Kevin Durant is the ultimate weapon in this arms race because, you know, he's the championship icing on the cake for any team. He made an unbelievable Warriors team untouchable. Now, will he do the same thing to this Brooklyn Nets squad? Now we get the opportunity to see the pieces really fit together, including LaMarcus Aldridge and now Blake Griffin. And this is going to be a wild combination. You're going to see a very small sample size of chemistry being built practically overnight, and that mixed in with the great expectations based on their talents. One thing I think, Rach, that people don't realize enough is that Kevin Durant, he really carries a heavy offensive load each and every night. The thing is, he makes it look so easy, but this year it's different because the eyes of the world are watching Brooklyn, and this journey will not be easy at all, especially with that small sample size.
Here's what I know about Kevin Durant. He has historically come back very strong, even from major injuries, right? We saw him come back from the Achilles after so much time off and looked unbelievable at the beginning of this season. We saw in the past some of his major injuries in Golden State, or more so in Oklahoma City, came back, was lights out. So I don't expect too big an adjustment from him coming off this hamstring injury. And I'm with you guys. This team is so damn dangerous that I don't think it's going to be a huge problem to figure out who plays where. But you need more than seven games to figure it out. So it's definitely something that they will probably get all these three guys back on the court again this week together. Let's move over to Lonzo Ball and the Pelicans, because last night, Lonzo had 27 points, a career-high 8 three-pointers in a win over the Rockets. You might recall Ball's name thrown around quite a bit at the trade deadline, although he ultimately ended up staying with the Pels. He is a restricted free agent this summer. So, Chinay, are Lonzo's career-high 8 threes something, nothing, or everything?
I love how you bring that up, Rach, how people were talking about him and look at what he's doing. You always provide the perfect context, which is why this is something. What I love about Lonzo Ball is that he truly understands what it takes to be a professional in the NBA at the highest level. He came in as a flashy, skilled passer, but he learned that he had to address his shot to be taken seriously as a complete professional player. And guess what? You know, that shot at the time before was a threat to unlocking his full game, especially playing with Brandon Ingram and Zion. He needed to help stretch the floor. Plus, you lose a sniper like J.J. Redick too, right? And guess what? He stepped up, and now we are seeing all of that hard work pay off, and that is a real professional's grind, which is why I respect what he's done.
I agree it's something, Rachel, as well. I think, obviously, Lonzo Ball's trending in the right direction. He's still a career percentage shooter of 39.8%, still shooting under 40% for his career. And I'm not just talking about threes, I'm talking across the board. Still has some work to do, obviously, in that situation. But if he keeps taking threes, as many as 8 threes a game, that's a lot for him. I mean, to make 8, that's a lot for him. Then he's trending in the right direction and gives the Pelicans a decision to make. And that's what every player wants, right? To put themselves in a position where you're going to make your team make a decision about you, because you will have other suitors. And Lonzo Ball will have other suitors as a restricted free agent. And, of course, the Pelicans can match.
That's really the key, right? Because, look, I will say personally, I have gotten to the point watching this season and how much scoring inflation we have. I mean, it's not arguable anymore. Like, we look at the numbers, something like, what, 9 of the top 10 offenses ever in the history of the NBA are mysteriously in the last two seasons, right? I mean, so anytime someone has a career high, or frankly, anytime someone has an NBA record X or Y, I'm just not weighing it the same as I did years ago, because we have had scoring inflation. That being said, your point about him being a restricted free agent, Jackie, there aren't going to be that many free agents out there this summer. So even a guy who's restricted could get some serious offers from other teams, could get one of those poison pill contracts where they make it really difficult for the Pelicans. And this is the risk they took. They knew when they decided not to extend him coming into this season, this was potentially going to happen. And as you say, Chinay, he's paying it off the best that he can. All right, we're going to talk a little Joel Embiid next. Rejoin the Sixers this weekend. What does this mean for his team going forward? We'll discuss that. Joel Embiid won the game in his return from injury. He logged 24-8 in 29 minutes of action. Afterward, he shared his thoughts on how he felt when he first got injured. This is great. Take a listen.
You know, laying on the floor in Washington, I honestly thought I was done. The pain, you know, our body was hurting. I was just, you know, crying and, you know, asking myself, why me? Like, why does it always happen to me? You know, when everything seems to be going well, you know, with the team and myself, you know, something always has to happen. And, you know, I'm glad there wasn't anything bad, and I'm able to, you know, get back on the court and, you know, help the team go on this championship run.
I really appreciated Joel taking us inside like that, his honesty. I just think he always gives us such a great feel for what it's like in the bad, terrible moments and the great, awesome moments. And this was one that started out feeling terrible, but obviously has not been as bad as he feared. What do you think, Shanae, his return to the Sixers really means for that team?
I think it's perfect timing, honestly, because there are about, what, 20 or so games remaining before the postseason, and this is why stars are coming back now. Joel Embiid, and we already talked about Kevin Durant, not tonight, I think that's what you said earlier, but very soon. This is a time to battle for playoff positioning at the top, especially of the Eastern Conference, because the 76ers, they fought so hard this season to maintain their positioning, and now Joel has an opportunity to see that through. Now, for Joel personally, it wasn't his best shooting night, but because he's still going to have time to get back in rhythm, I think for them to win, for him to not have a great night, it tells you exactly what you need to know about the 76ers. Now, overall, the East is going to be fun. We've got the Sixers, we've got the Nets, we've got the Bucks. And this is a year where Joel played at an MVP level, and the time to make the push is right now. He is unequivocally the go-to player. We saw that based on who was made available in the trade discussions for James Harden. Now, what will he do with it? I think we'll find out down the stretch as he maintains his health.
So Rachel, a lot of people are going to tell you, well, the Sixers were 7-3 without Joel Embiid. Good for them. You go nowhere in the playoffs without Joel Embiid dominating. And what do you want in the playoffs? You want a player that can absolutely dominate. And I always laughed when Daryl Morey went to the Sixers and everybody said, well, Joel Embiid isn't his kind of player. That's nonsense. Yes, he played with threes because he had James Harden. People forget he had Yao Ming. He told me once, is Shaq available? Because if he did, I'd set him up on the post and I'd feed him 20 shots a game. That's what they're going to do in the postseason. And their number two in defensive efficiency, primarily because of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, two of the best defenders in the league. They're a completely different team once he's back. They're a contender once he's back.
Absolutely. And look, Daryl Morey will do what is best statistically optimized for the players he has. That is the answer on how he operates, not just by one certain sort of way of doing things. And Doc Rivers, I think, has been so fantastic for that team in terms of letting everyone be themselves. We've seen that with Ben Simmons. We've talked about it a lot. He's not trying to force Ben to be a three-point shooter or anything he doesn't want to be. But that goes for Joel Embiid, too, that he has really leaned into what Joel is, what Joel wants to be. The success there speaks for itself. I can't wait. Shanae, you're completely right. These East playoffs are going to be juicy.
Yes.
They're going to be good. All right, coming up, it was a tough weekend for the Warriors. It was a tough weekend. Well, we'll get into it. Where do they go from here? We'll discuss the weekend that was and the future of the Dubs next on The Jump. Did you ever read that book when you were a kid, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day? Well, that's what it was for the Warriors, except you can extend that to not just a day, but the entire weekend. On Friday night, Golden State lost by 53 to the Raptors, a thrashing so demoralizing that Klay Thompson, the most easygoing human on the planet, went on a tirade to some of his teammates postgame about how just unacceptable it all was. At least on that night, the rest of the roster could point to the team's stars being out with a variety of injuries. But last night, well, Steph Curry was back, dropping 37 points, no less. And the Warriors still lost, this time to Atlanta, whose bench outscored their bench 55-19. The main problem was, well, everything. But particularly egregious was the team's undisciplined defense, which helped usher the Hawks to the free throw line an eye-popping 45 times. By the end of the night, Golden State had more fouls than assists and their seventh loss in eight games. The team that at one point appeared ready to camp out in the middle of the West playoff bracket and at least make some noise in the postseason is now clinging to the 10th spot in the standings, and morale is extremely low. Here is just a sampling of some of the team's postgame comments from the past couple games.
Humiliating for everybody involved. it hurts, you know, to get smacked like that. You know, I'm a grown man with a family, so when you get your butt handed to you, I mean, it's not pleasant.
I hope it stings. I hope it isn't, you know, I hope it's uncomfortable. I hope that it motivates you to keep grinding, challenging yourself to get better. Cannot play the way that we've played the last, you know, significant stretch and expect things to change. So it kind of is what it is. We gotta make the necessary adjustments. It sucks right now. Losing sucks. It's a terrible feeling. In the locker room, we don't really have much to smile about. And it's kind of the vibe right now.
There are times for humor. There's times for joy. There's times for, serious discussion and soul searching. This is a time for soul searching, for sure.
You can tell just how brutal this has been for those inside the franchise. And while it's certainly possible the team will rebound a bit in the coming weeks as its schedule is getting more and more friendly, questions about the team's bigger picture decision making are going to linger. Even once Klay Thompson returns next season, is the rest of this team's roster constructed in a way that will make the Warriors contenders again? Doesn't seem like it. Is Steve Kerr deploying the guys he does have in the right way? Increasingly vocal segments of the fan base sure don't seem to think so. What about an asset like number two overall pick James Wiseman? How should he be developed? Last night, Wiseman played just 2 9-minute stretches, part of what seems to be a larger regression. And then there's the biggest question of all, the one that looms over every move this team makes. How can the Warriors maximize the final years of Steph's prime? Curry is one of the most exceptional, unusual supernovas the NBA has ever seen. And while, yes, his game should age extremely well, he is 33 years old. And eventually, like with every other great who has ever played, time is going to dim that light. The Warriors have consistently said they have visions of winning another title with their current core, and maybe eventually that will be true. But at least right now, eventually seems pretty far away, especially after a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad weekend like this. And we now welcome in ESPN senior writer for The Undefeated. Welcome, Mark Spears.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. You followed this team since long before the dynasty started. Where do you think the Warriors go from here?
Well, it doesn't get any better tomorrow night, Giannis.
Yeah, you know, I do think it's going to be a very difficult stretch for the Warriors. I even was just sort of thinking in my head, Steph couldn't even remember when the last time, you know, they played well for him to reference to, you know, figure out how long that stretch was. But I do think that we can learn a lot from the Warriors last night, no matter how great Steph Curry is, 37 points. By the way, he is still a superstar. I will fight anyone who says, oh, Steph can't lead a team. Miss me with this, okay? But the reality is that the way that the NBA is set up right now with talent on rosters everywhere, Steph can't do it by himself. And for the team that's motto, and this is ironic, you know, Rachel, their motto for so long with strength and numbers, lately it hasn't been that. The Hawks, their bench last night, I believe, dropped 55 points compared to the Warriors' 19. It used to be the reverse for the way this team was set up. I think Golden State really has to look in the mirror because you are in Steph's prime, as you allude to, and when Klay comes back, you want to protect that as well and maximize their talents, which means you have to make very hard decisions.
Mark, we lost you there for a second, but I'd love you to continue your thought. Or not. Jackie, go ahead.
He looked like he was thinking really hard for a second.
Here's what Mark would say, Rachel. Yes. I'm going to read Mark's mind for him. One of the biggest problems they have, you mentioned the free throw shooting. That has been a trend all year long. They give up a little over 26 free throw attempts a game. That is dead last in the league. That strikes to be a lack of discipline. So that's something that Steve Kerr is trying to control. You mentioned James Wiseman. He is a rookie. I think there was a lot put upon him because of the unusual circumstances of this team. So I don't know that you can make a judgment on him in this, his rookie season, where things have been so up and down. You do have a decision to make about Kelly Oubre. Is he part of the team's future? He's an unrestricted free agent in 2021. So there's some wiggle room there. You have to make a decision. And you're right, Rachel. You said it in your open. To think that Klay Thompson comes back and solves everything, I think we all know that's not true. But it will help players like Draymond Green, who needs to be a complementary player with great shooters around him. Add another shooter or two, you see his strengths, they'll go on the rise. Also, Andrew Wiggins, is he part of your future? They have more questions than answers right now.
And Chinee, you bring up miss me with any Steph Curry slander, and I think all of us agree with you on that. What about the Steve Kerr criticism? 100%. Because you were talking about a guy with 8 rings, but who has heard his fair share of people telling him he doesn't know how to do his job?
Yeah, Steve Kerr is always going to get quick criticism because of what went down with the coaching transition and then obviously stepping into immediate success. And of that Warriors dynastic run, that success, you know how it is. Players often get the credit and coaches typically in those instances get the blame for anything goes wrong. So I can see how the dynamics are built to make him be the first person you look at. But it's important to note that the Warriors, their stars the last 2 seasons have dealt with injuries significantly missing large portions of time. But last night's score, I mean, losing by 55. Anytime you hear
on Friday, yeah,
smacked, like not smacked. Oh yeah, exactly, sorry. On Friday, thank you. That's not just on the coach. These are things that the team has to address because you're professionals and that should never happen. And that's an effort thing as well. I think it's a combination of a lot of questions, as Jackie says, and few answers.
And look, Jackie, I couldn't agree with you more. There is a lack of discipline on defense that's leading to all of those fouls. But you asked Steve Kerr about it. You asked Steph Curry about it. And they all say, it's not like we're not talking about it. It's not like Steve doesn't remind us before the game, at right. halftime, after the game. I heard from some of the players last night, like, at some point, it's on us, right? I mean, at some point, you can only say to guys so many times, hey, keep your hands to yourself while still being aggressive. But right. they keep ending with this result. Right. The amount of times they're sending other teams to the free throw line, you're just not going to win that way when you're playing
Crazy.
Across the thin margins that they are with Klay Thompson out and all the other things that they're dealing with. Chinee, thank you so much for joining us today. You're off to your radio show. Everyone tune into that after this show.
Go Stanford!
Jackie's going to stick around. Mark Spears, we're going to get him back
right,
and
Chinee.
Unfrozen. Gosh darn it. Coming up, we'll talk about Gonzaga's Jalen Suggs making that strong case to be the number one pick in the forthcoming NBA draft. Do his final 4 heroics have any impact on Cade Cunningham's throne? Stick around to find out what scouts are saying.
Gallo, this is VC here. Great game tonight.
VC, where are you at?
I'm right behind you. Right here behind you.
Why they told me to look over there?
I'm right here.
There's a camera
right there.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
See, they wanted him to look at the camera, but he just wanted to look at Vince Carter. Very nice moment. Danilo Gallinari, our jump teammate, Mr. VC last night. Former Hawk turned Clipper, let's get to that. Rajon Rondo making his debut against the Lakers yesterday. Rondo only played 13 minutes off the bench. He's still dealing with that adductor groin injury. But Paul George has already seen enough friends to know how valuable Rajon is. Take a listen. Nope, don't take a listen. Take a listen to me, friends, because I'm going to read it out loud. Story time. Quote, Rondo is a leader. You know the point guard. He's a leader. We're going to listen to him. I look at him as a leader of this group. He'll hold a lot of weight. He holds a lot of weight in the locker room. Jackie, this is what Rajon Rondo was brought in for, correct?
100%. All he has to do is walk in and say, been there, done that. Twice. Mm-hmm. One more than his buddy KG at this point. I'll tell you, when I did a piece with Trae Young earlier this year, he talked extensively about Rondo and how much Rondo helped him in terms of figuring out the game, when to shoot, when to pass, all little things like that. Not in his face, just sitting on the plane and casually saying, you want to look at this film? Mm. And that's what he'll do with veterans and young guys alike.
Yeah, I think with Rondo, he kind of reminds me of a guy on their coaching staff in the latter stage of his career, you know, Chauncey Billups.
Yep.
You know, Rondo's going to bring leadership. He's going to bring playmaking. He's going to hold everyone accountable, whether it's Kawhi Leonard or Paul George or everyone else on the roster, and make them better. I already saw something in his first game where he made sure that Kawhi got more touches. This is a guy who has championships. He's a veteran, and I think that he is the missing piece to, you know, making this Clippers ship, you know, move the right way, sail the right way.
Yeah, and look, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George have done enough in their career. They're not going to listen to just anyone pointing at them, telling them to do things differently. But as you can hear from Paul's quote there, they are happy to listen to this guy. He has earned the reputation he has, not just for being playoff Rondo, although, again, that's real. Just look at the stats. But also being the kind of guy who sees things other people don't. And I think the level of respect around the league for him is really going to be a huge factor here. He's got another situation. He's got to come in, organize this offense, especially in the clutch. They're second to worst in the league in clutch time, which should not be true for players of that caliber and talent. We'll see if he can get it done. All right, let's move over to the college game for a second. What a game it was in the Final Four nightcap between UCLA and undefeated Gonzaga the other night. Top five NBA draft prospect Jalen Suggs, dazzling NBA scouts with a block and a dime combo in crunch time, and then oh, yeah, you've seen the highlight, I don't know, 200, 300 times, the game winner, beating the Bruins in overtime. Mark, where do you think his case stands for number one pick in the overall NBA draft? Because there's a lot of division on this one.
Look, this is no shade on Cade. When Jalen Suggs started this tournament, one GM told me it was about Cade. Now he said, look, if he got Cade, or Suggs, or even Evan Mobley from USC, he'd be happy. I think that a lot of the draft experts are saying that it's Cade. But look, keep an eye on Jalen Green as well. Mm-hmm. Two other scouts told me that if they could get either Cade, Mobley, Jalen, or Suggs, they'd be happy. But, you know, with what Suggs is doing in terms of showing leadership, making big shots, leading this great team to the title game, I think he's making a strong case for the number one pick.
So I would say consideration is the key word here. Of course he's going to be considered for the number one pick. And every time he makes a clutch play in a pressure situation, if you're a GM that's up near the top of that draft, you're going to say, okay, that's the kind of player I need who can perform under pressure. So certainly Jalen Suggs has proven to everybody over the last few days he's capable of doing that on both ends of the floor. But does that automatically vault him to the number one spot? I really think it depends on who's picking number one.
Yeah.
And you've nailed all four of them, Mark. Those are the four players I hear consistently in some order among the top four.
And look, I will say this. It is nice to see guys like Cade or guys like Jalen making their case in the NCAA tournament. We have talked so much over the past couple years about the alternate routes to the NBA. Those are important. They work. Look what LaMelo Ball is doing. Getting that pro experience before you come to the league has obviously paid off for some guys. You mentioned Jalen Green playing with the G League Ignite, of course, also. But that being said, the NCAA tournament is still a showcase, and the fact that we are seeing it work the way it has worked with the NBA for so long in terms of prospects coming in, that's fun too. There are more than one way to skin a cat, as they said. Do you guys have a quick prediction for tonight? What do you got, Mark?
Gonzaga finally gets over the hump, wins the championship. Suggs will be most outstanding player.
What about you, Jackie?
It better be Gonzaga, Rachel, because if it is, I win the Around the Horn panelist pool, and that's important
to me.
Ah.
So go Gonzaga. No money involved, right?
No money.
More than money. It's pride on the line. There you go. Up next.
Exactly. And unmutes.
Exactly. An unmute. That is worth more dollars than I can say. Up next, is it too soon to call Knicks Nets a legit NBA rivalry? Stick around. We'll discuss. It's crunch time here on The Jump. Grant Hill named the next managing director of Team USA Basketball. So thrilled about this. He's taken over for Jerry Colangelo after the Tokyo Olympics. Hill won, of course, a gold medal with Team USA back in the 96 Olympics. Mark, how do you feel about this move?
Amazing move. Just intelligent, great guys in the front office with the Hawks. And I think he'll do a phenomenal job and just do a thorough job, just like he does in everything he does now.
Right. And the whole thing about that job is you have to be an ambassador to the rest of the world. Grant Hill has been doing this in his sleep for the longest time. I hope he can help to continue fundraising for the Hall the way Jerry did. Cross promotion there.
There
you go. That really helps too.
Absolutely. And you're also being an ambassador within the league, right? The Team USA depends on NBA stars volunteering their time, especially in these long seasons where they go deep into the playoffs, to participate in the training camps, participate in the Olympic Games themselves. You need buy-in from players The person on the other end of that phone call, when the guys get it, matters. When the other guy on the other end is Grant Hill,
yes, it does.
That is a very weighty phone call. Let's get to the battle for New York. Knicks and Nets meeting for the third time this season tonight. Last time they met, that was March 15th. Julius Randle, remember, got heated with the refs on the disputed travel call late in the fourth. Here is Reggie Bullock over the weekend on potentially facing a healthy Nets big three. Now, we know that won't happen in entirety. KD is out, but still, take a listen.
So with the Nets, they may have their big three ready for you on Monday. I was wondering what you guys thought of facing those guys.
We got a big five.
We got a big 15.
Big 15, so we're not really concerned about a big three.
All right, now we know the play-in is a factor, but if the Knicks took care of business in the play-in, they would be slated, in fact, to face the Nets in the first round if the playoffs begin today. So, Mark, big five, big three, is this turning into a legit rivalry?
It's kind of like the Lakers-Clippers thing, except on the East Coast. I mean, Knicks fans are always going to be Knicks fans. And no matter what Jason Kidd and RJ and Kenya did, Knicks fans don't care. So I wonder what would happen if the Nets won. Would they care? But I wish we could have big-time fans and those teams make the playoffs so we could brew something special. And I like how, you know, Randle said and clarified that this is a big 15 because their second five might even be better than their first five.
All right. So I looked it up. The lifetime rivalry, 106 wins for the Knicks, 105 wins for the Nets. You can't even make that up. So, yes, will this be a rivalry down the road? I can buy into that because I think both of these teams are going to be good for a while, and I think the Knicks are just getting started. But rivalries to me mean something really, really important on the line. Neither one of these franchises have won a championship, Rachel, in over four decades. So get back to me when you're starting to win championships, and then we can talk about rivalries.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Look, I'm interested to see what happens with the crowds here in Brooklyn in the playoff run, especially if they do end up facing the Knicks in a series. You mentioned that Clippers-Lakers crowd kind of differential. We're going to have fans back in the building at Staples Center in the middle of this month. And we already have fans back in the building in both Brooklyn and New York. And those numbers are expected to grow as more vaccinations happen. I don't know if, like at Clippers-Lakers games that are Clippers home games, we get a lot of Lakers fans. I don't know if at Brooklyn Nets home games, if they're playing the Knicks in a playoff series, what proportion of Knicks fans versus home Nets fans we will have. Do you have a guess, guys, real quick?
Oh, man. I don't know that the Knicks fans even care to go to Brooklyn.
Mark.
I think for the first time in years, they reason to travel, Mark. They've got something to look forward to.
There you go. This just in at the buzzer. North Carolina expected to promote longtime assistant Hubert Davis as the Tar Heels' new coach. Sources have confirmed to ESPN, first reported by Inside Carolina and the Raleigh News and Observer. And as our colleagues at The Undefeated point out, Davis is the first black head coach in North Carolina men's basketball history. Mark, what's your reaction to this?
Well, kudos to Hubert Davis in North Carolina. I think they picked the best guy for the job, you know, regardless of what race he is, and they kept it in the family. He has certainly paid his dues. And it's interesting, we're seeing more and more NBA players go to college route to coach. So I'm excited to see what happens with Hubert there.
Yep.
I think this was a no-brainer, and I have a feeling that the retiring coach put his stamp of approval on this and maybe even had something to do with why he decided to step aside. Hubert Davis is the perfect guy for this job. He's been groomed to get this job. He understands the history and the weight of being the North Carolina coach. Great choice.
Yeah. And look, as you say, it may be a no-brainer and it may be all on track. It's still nice to see it happening and happening the way it should. We have not seen that consistently throughout either the pro or college ranks this year. It's nice to see it when it works. All right.
Yeah.
We can't let the day pass without wishing a happy birthday to our super producer, the mad professor, Michael Bodmer. You saw him the other day ducking out of the way during the Can I Have a Word segment. he created. Vaz, our uber creative member of our staff, loves the Blazers. You may notice that on this show. Produces a lot of the best visuals you see. His contributions cannot be understated. Vaz does not like attention, but you know what today? It's your birthday, Michael. We got to do it. We appreciate you. Enjoy. Have a great day.